Dr. Wayne Hunthausen is back. He runs the Westwood Animal Hospital in Westwood on the Kansas side, and he's an animal behavior specialist. He's here to help you grapple with your pet issues, whether it's excessive barking or socializing with other dogs as they go on walks. Today, Dr. Hunthausen is here to talk about how our pets cope with a death in their family pack or pride. And you can give us a call with your questions, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. And Wayne, nice to have you. Welcome
great
back.
To be here in this beautiful Kansas City day.
Boy, not bad. Eh?
Yeah.
Not bad. Well, do pets react differently depending on whether a human or a pet member of their family dies? How does that play out?
Well, they can, and it depends on the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And whether they grieve and how much they grieve depends on the pet and its personality, how long it's been in the family, what kind of relationship it has. But we'll see some pets that grieve dearly over the loss of another pet from the home or from a human family member, and others maybe not so much. So it's kind of like people, you know, like people have different levels of grieving, I think, when they lose somebody special.
When a dog grieves, what happens?
Well, you see behaviors that are very similar to people when they grieve. You'll see changes in behavior, such as you might see decreased appetite, decreased activity, although sometimes you see might see more activity. You might see searching-type behavior and pacing. Some pets will exhibit increased vocalizing behavior, whining, maybe crying as they're searching for that lost family member.
And what do you do as the owner? How do you help?
Well, probably in general, the best thing for the human family and the pet family is to provide an increased amount of physical activity and mental stimulation.
Mm-hmm.
And so with the dogs, the best thing to do is get them out for, depending on their health status and their age, but lots of walks. If it's a young dog, maybe take them to daycare a little more frequently, play more fetch with the dog. Some of the dogs that enjoy learning things, you can teach them a new trick or review obedience training for treats. Some of the little dogs that maybe have had no training and they don't know how to play fetch, you could do something as simple as sit on a chair, or sit on the floor in the kitchen with the dog and take little pieces, maybe the size of a peanut, or little pieces of chicken or turkey, and just kind of toss them around the room and let the pet chase those around.
Mm-hmm.
Visiting new areas on walks can be real helpful too. You know, whatever you can do to provide the physical stimulation, it has endorphin release and has a calming effect and provides a distraction. The other thing that we'll do for dogs and cats is keep them mentally stimulated. And there are a lot of toys out there for dogs and cats these days that you can put treat in, or for cats you can put catnip in, and the dog or
they've got to work at it a little bit.
Yeah, they roll it around and they'd have to figure out how to get the food and the treats out of these toys, and that's real helpful too.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. How do you know, Wayne, when it's time to seek professional help to get your pets through a difficult time?
Well, yes, and that's a good question, because a number of the signs that I've described can also be signs of illness. And so if appetite would be an important one, and if you have a pet that really you see a significant decrease in the appetite and lethargy, well, what we want to do is we want to make sure that don't have a concurrent illness going on. And so if the decreased appetite and activity is severe, especially it lasts more than severe and lasts 3 days or more, then the first trip is to the veterinarian.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can check the cat or the dog out and make sure that there's no underlying illness that needs to be addressed.
Do you prescribe antidepressants?
You can. If we rule out our medical problems and we have a pet where the decreased appetite, the withdrawal is going on for more than a couple of weeks, it seems like it's really severe, then yes, medications that specifically reduce anxiety or address depression, the same ones that we use in people, can be used to help the pet out.
You know, in the case of a dog's death and the surviving dog in the family has been dependent on that mate, do you ever advise the family to forego a respectable mourning period and consider finding a mate sooner rather than later for the sake of the dog?
It depends so much on the family, and
mm-hmm.
they've got a grieving process to go through too, and some people just aren't ready to have another pet come in to the household, the family has to decide, you know, if they're ready for that. And then the other thing you have to think about is the pet. And even though the dog or the cat had a relationship with that other pet for 5, 10, 15 years,
yeah,
doesn't mean it's necessarily ready to have another pet come in the household. That might be actually be more disruptive, and that's especially true of cats. Even though a cat has lived with another cat or two through most of its life, cats don't always deal real well with a new cat in the house, especially if it's a kitten, because kittens and puppies can be pretty obnoxious because they're so self-centered. It's all about me.
Yeah.
And really, that might not be the time to have to be dealing with a young active pet. You may want to spend more time with the older pet.
Do dogs and cats grieve differently?
I think my experience has been that dogs tend to grieve a little bit more seriously
it.
Than
yeah.
in a more of exaggerated way than cats do,
mm-hmm.
and that's just real subjective evaluation there.
Yeah.
I don't know if anybody's done any studies on the difference.
You know, when the sole member of the household passes away, leaving the dog or cat behind, what are options when no other family members, you know, want to take the pet in? Are there special services for these orphan pets, or how does that work?
Well, my first step would be to network with friends and relatives, maybe mm-hmm. people that even know the dog already, and so they might have some bond where they might, you know, look at the situation, see, yes, I want to be helpful, and they'll adopt the pet. So that would be the first step. The next step would be to talk to the pet's veterinarian and see if the veterinarian has any suggestions. If you run into dead ends with those suggestions, then you would talk to the rescue groups and the shelters. And so Wayside Waif, Animal Haven, Kansas City Pet Project, those organizations can be real helpful.
What other pets have you seen, Wayne, that you know, have reacted poorly to a death in the family?
Probably the other most common pet that we would see some problems in would be birds. And birds
really?
Can have some very strong social attachments to family members, to other birds in the household. And you can see the same thing. You can see depression or anxious behaviors, vocalizing and pacing or moving around on the perches, decrease in appetite.
How about horses?
I don't treat horses,
yeah,
but any
yeah.
you know, pretty much any social animal is susceptible to having issues related to depression or grief. You know, elephants, there've been a lot of classic studies on elephants and loss of an elephant pack member and how they grow through grieving.
So you haven't had an elephant or a horse walk through the doors of the animal hospital lately?
There may be some hiding out in Westwood, but
they're in downtown Westwood, Kansas. Okay, Dr. Wayne Hunhausen is our guest. He's an expert in animal behavior issues. If you want to join our conversation again, 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. What are the big issues you're seeing these days at the Westwood Animal Hospital, Wayne? What's coming up in springtime 2016 here?
Well, this time of year, the pets are going to be outside more, and so we're seeing some of the issues we see are dogs are coming in with scrapes and other issues because the fence is kind of deteriorated during the winter.
Oh.
And so that's go out and check the fencing, check for stagnant water. One of the problems that's kind of popped up here in recent months in our area is leptospirosis. And it's an infectious disease that we used to vaccinate for all the time about maybe 20 or 30 years ago, but the incidence of leptospirosis decreased over the years, and so most veterinarians didn't recommend that as a core vaccine. This particular organism, the reservoir is in wildlife, and so the dogs that are high at risk would be dogs that are in areas where there's a lot of wildlife and there's stagnant water. It's often passed in the urine.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but what in the last several years, there's been an increase across the nation in leptospirosis infections and even in the Kansas City, the Midwest area. And so we've recently recommended that dogs that are at risk be vaccinated for leptospirosis in addition to the other vaccines we give.
You know, what about allergies? I mean, it's spring, everything's in bloom. Are you seeing a lot of dogs and cats with allergy problems?
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are two peak allergy seasons for dogs and cats, and the big one is just the same for people. It's the end of August, early fall. The second spike is right around now when mm-hmm. you have the tree pollens up in the air. So, yes, we are seeing itchy dogs. And it's interesting, people, when we have allergies, typically you see upper respiratory signs because the cells that interact with the pollens, the allergens, are in our upper respiratory tract, and we cough and we wheeze. We have runny eyes and nose and so forth. But in cats and dogs, those cells are predominantly in the skin. And so instead of seeing the upper respiratory signs, we typically see dogs and cats that are chewing their hair out, maybe have sores from scratching and things like that.
It can get pretty severe, can it?
Oh, well, yes. I've seen dogs that have literally chewed through their skin with severe allergies, probably the worst allergy. And I don't see this anymore because our flea products are so good. But flea allergies are really rough ones because some dogs and some cats become allergic to the allergens in flea saliva. And where a normal dog or cat would be bitten and be itchy for a day maybe, these pets would stay severely itchy for 4 or 5 days. So if they're bitten just maybe twice a week, they're itchy all the time, and they really tear themselves up.
Okay, our number here again, 816-235-2888. If you have a question about your pet, something going on with him or her, and you need some help, 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR up to date. And when it comes to allergies, you treat dogs and cats with medicines similar to what I'm taking this time of year, right? And that's the funny thing here.
Probably, yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and so the first step is avoidance. So if there are some fields around there where there are a lot of there's a strong pollen source, well, maybe you don't walk the dog in those areas. Mm-hmm. Change your filters real frequently. Keep the house cleaned up so that, that there's less exposure. And then it depends on the severity of the problem. And with some pets, we can use antihistamines like Benadryl and other related antihistamines, and those have a wide margin of safety, and those work real well. And some pets, if it's a short term seasonal allergy, sometimes low doses of oral steroids and really low doses can be safe for short periods, and those can be effective. If, though, you have a pet that's allergic year-round, the allergy is real severe, you don't want to give them too many of the drugs that can have more side effects, then what we'll do is refer our patients over to a veterinary dermatologist. And they can skin test the pets just like we're skin tested. They can tell exactly what they're allergic to, and then they can be given immunosuppressive shots that desensitize the pet to those allergens. And even though that's a more expensive process to go through, it's a lot safer for the pet and giving them a strong medicine year-round.
And how do you administer those pills, if that's what the drug is? I mean, I can't even begin to imagine.
Obviously not a cat or a dog owner.
but a good question. You convinced me not to be.
Yeah. there's the good side.
Too many years of listening to Wayne Hunhausen talking about all this. Yeah.
Usually the easiest way is to put it in food. Mm-hmm. And but sometimes some of these kids are real smart, and they'll end up eating the treat and spitting the pill out. And
really,
there are a couple little tricks on that. One is use more than one treat. And what I'll do is pick a really palatable treat, and I'll put the pill in the first treat I'm going to give. So I take the two treats, one has the pill in it, and I'll kind of tease the dog just a little bit so it really wants it. And then while I'm holding both in front of the dog's nose, I give him the first one with the pill. And it's usually the dog will gobble that one down because he wants his second treat.
Right.
And then you can just go ahead and give that as a reinforcement. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to some phone calls here. Let's go to Michelle from Oak Grove on the Missouri side. Michelle, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Hi. I have a dog, and he has gotten pancreatitis twice, once in December, and then he just came down with it again last week. And I wanted to know if there's anything that we can do to prevent him from getting it again.
Pancreatitis, what is that, Dr. Hunhausen?
Well, the pancreas is a digestive organ, and it lies right along the small intestine, right after the intestine connects to the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
So food goes from the stomach, where it's exposed to stomach acids, and then it goes into the small intestine. And as it does that, the pancreas secretes enzymes that digest those foods.
Mm-hmm.
And so itis means inflammation. So pancreatitis is an inflammation of the pancreas. There can be a number of reasons. It can be caused by infection. In serious cases, it can be caused by cancer. Fortunately, that's pretty rare. Oftentimes, we don't know exactly what causes it. It's more common in female dogs, and especially overweight females. In some cases, a high fat or spicy meal will trigger the problem. So for most pets, the diet can be helpful. And so a diet that's less likely to stimulate the pancreas, a diet that's lower in fat, that's maybe a little more on the bland side, that's often what's prescribed. And has your veterinarian prescribed any specific diet or anything else for your pet?
Well, he's on a diet for kidney stones. So he's on like a UD diet, so it's a real bland diet anyway.
Yes. If he's on UD, then that means he's got the type of stones that the diet is really important for that issue. And so you got to balance what's the more serious, and probably the stone diet and avoiding any kind of snacks that are spicy or fatty would be probably the best thing that you can do.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Michelle, good luck.
Bye-bye.
816-235-2888 is our phone number here, or tweet us at KCUR up to date. Dr. Wayne Hunhausen's our guest. He's an animal behavior expert, runs the Westwood Animal Hospital in downtown Westwood, Kansas. Lisa from Midtown. Lisa, you're on up to date with Dr. Hunhausen.
Hi.
Hi, Lisa.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Hi. We've got two dogs that we've had for about 5 years, and then some people moved and left two cats that I think were mostly outside, and I took them in around November, and they live on the third floor, and they've got their spot, and they're adapting. The problem is the cat, one of them, is attacking our dogs.
Ah.
And he's not provoked, and he's got his safe place, and I'm trying to figure out how to deal with that. Right now, I just stand between him and the dogs when I see him coming. But I'm not really sure how to discipline a cat, or if you can.
Yeah,
cats do things like that, Wayne.
So
yeah, help Lisa.
Yes, and he just doesn't like the dogs.
Okay.
Does
he?
So now Lisa, we have a house divided.
Does a cat actually go after the dog? In other words, if the dog walks in the room, will the cat run across the room and attack the dog, or is it only when the dog gets up and gets too close?
No, the dog's not doing anything. A lot of times the dogs are sleeping, and he just decides he's had enough of them.
He'll run up and attack a sleeping dog?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty rude.
I mean, it's like he's decided he doesn't want them in the room anymore.
Yeah.
And it's like, and he's figured out they'll run, but now they're getting a little annoyed with him, and they're starting to growl or fight back.
So. One other reason I have questions about cats. Yes, and their purpose on this planet. Yes, Wayne.
But well, the other one is fine with the dogs. I mean, she'll curl up with him. It's just I think he was outside so much, he just doesn't. Dogs are not safe for him.
Okay.
And,
well,
doesn't want them in the room.
Yeah, you've got a pretty challenging problem here. So, cats are always are more challenging because there are a few things that you can do than with dogs. With dogs, you can you set social boundaries, and you can do obedience training, and all these seem to help out. And you can't do this with cats. So what can we do here? In general, if you want to stop a social behavior, you have two choices. You can reward an opposite behavior. So we can reward a dog for not jumping up when you walk in the door. We teach it to sit. So if it's sitting, it can't jump up. Or you can apply something aversive, something the pet doesn't like when it engages in that behavior. And you might be able to use a little bit of both. Cats are really... discipline is really problematic with cats, and they don't tolerate punishment well at all. So any kind of physical punishment is not a good idea, and even yelling is not a good idea, especially if you have problems between two pets in a household, because if you yell at the problem pet, this cat, you're also kind of yelling at the dogs too, so the dog gets a double whammy. He gets attacked by the cat, and you're yelling, which oftentimes the dog assumes any kind of yelling is the discipline for it. I would use a water gun to interrupt the behavior. And so I would keep a water gun available, and so maybe two or three. So anytime the cat starts that behavior, I would give it a squirt. But you want to do that without really allowing the cat to know that you're doing it. So you want to be as covert as possible, which means you don't yell. It's not like, make my day, and then squirt the cat, okay? All right, so you just want to give it a squirt. You don't want to really punish the cat or hurt the cat. You just want to interrupt the behavior so it can't follow through with it. So you want to consistently interrupt the behavior. And then what I would do is I'd have treats available, really special treats. And anytime the cat sees the dog comes in the room, the cat walks in the room, anytime it sees the dog, throw five or six small treats to the cat. So we can see if we can consistently interrupt it.
And the dogs are come eat those treats. You know, that's what's going to happen there.
The dogs are now so afraid of the cats, I have trouble even getting them to come in the room where the cat is.
Yeah.
So,
And you could throw treats to both of them. Anytime the cat walks in the room, throw a dog treat to the dogs and throw five or six little treats to the cat. And so
you could throw me a treat, Lisa. I wouldn't mind a treat. It's almost lunchtime. Throw me a little treat. Yeah.
I don't think you'd like the cat treats.
Yeah, maybe not.
So anyway, the idea is that you don't allow the cat to follow through with that behavioral sequence of going after the dogs. You interrupt it every time. And on the other side, there's some benefit to not going after the dogs, and you're associating something pleasant with the dogs being around. And then they're always supervised. You don't want to let the cat get away with the behavior by allowing them loose in the house when you're not around. Okay, so always supervise, interrupt the behavior, and then try to reward the non-attack behavior.
Okay, we'll give that a go.
And the other ingredient is a lot of patience.
Yeah, absolutely. And call us next time Wayne's on, Lisa, and let us know how it's going. I'll be curious to hear.
Okay, yeah, so we're several months into this. We'll see if we can make it.
Good
another
luck.
Few months with no incidents.
Yeah.
All right.
And there's one other thing that you might want to consider, since we are kind of limited in what we can do with the cat. Sometimes medication might help. And if we can give the cat a medication like maybe Prozac or Paxil, sometimes that'll reduce reactive behavior and impulsive behavior and calm things down enough so you can use more positive things in getting them together.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks again, Lisa.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Good luck.
Okay.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Let's go to Steve from Overland Park. Steve, you're on with Dr. Hunhausen. Good morning.
Yes, this is we were talking about this earlier. We have two dogs, and we lost one of them last fall. And the one we have he's a small poodle mix. He's just a little bitty guy, about 4 pounds. And we ended up getting another dog, a small dog, kind of a companion, and the small poodle mix, I don't know why, but he seems to be like fearful that he's not going to get any food or whatever, and it's never been an issue. It's never been something, and I don't know if it's just you know, he's reacting because he lost the other dog last fall or what, but he mealtime is like, he's like, feed me, feed me, feed me. And he doesn't growl, but he gobbles his food. He eats very quickly. I don't know. It just seems to be a change in his behavior since last fall.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. All right. So I'm glad to hear there's no aggression. So it just sounds like, adding the new pet to the household has increased his appetite because maybe he's afraid of losing it, like you suggested. So what can we do? Well, one simple thing might be to just avoid the problem by separating the dogs and see if you feed the dogs where they can't see each other. That might cause this behavior to cool off and dissipate over time. So that might be one thing that you can do. If you separate them and he still eats really fast, which can be a problem, some dogs will swallow a lot of air, then get bloat and other serious problems, then you can feed the pet out of either a food dispensing ball. It's a little ball with holes in it, so the dog pushes it around and he has to eat slower because only a few pieces come out at a time. Mm-hmm. Or you can feed the pet out of a maize bowl. And a maize bowl is exactly what it says. If you look from the top, it looks like a maze, and you put the food in there, and the pet has to use its tongue or push things around to eat pieces of kibble, one or two pieces at a time.
Yeah, that'd be great. They we've tried to feed them separated by, like, you know, 4 or 5 feet, and but he seems anxious, I guess is the good word for it. A little anxiety there that maybe someone's going to come over and take his food and. Yeah. And that's never been an issue. And it's just kind of surprising to us that he's taking on this kind of personality.
Yeah. Well, I think the key is keep them separate so they can't even see each other. Feed them out of a maize bowl or a food ball. And I think in a few months you should see a big change in that behavior.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Good luck, Steve. Yeah. Bye-bye. Let's go to Maria from Independence. Maria, you're on up to date. Good morning.
Good morning. I'd like to know what I can do for my rescue dog who just suffers terribly from anxiety and tremors when there's storms in the area, lightning, thunder, all of that. Thunder shirts, we've tried before, and they don't help. Is there anything that you might suggest?
Thunderstorms, Wayne.
Yeah, you can do behavioral management. You can do or environmental management, you could do behavior modification and medication for the dog that's really having panic attacks. So environmental management, keeping the pet in a room with the radio turned up and either the lights on all the time, so he can't see flashes, or in a darkened room, one or the other, that can be helpful. Providing a Kong toy or raw with full of food or a raw hide to provide some distraction. If it's mild, those things can help. As far as behavior modification, you want to do what's called desensitization and counter conditioning, which means, and you can go online, you can order it a CD of a storm. And the idea is you play this really frequently whenever the dog eats, when you have playtime, when you're giving the dog treats, but you start at a volume where the pet acts like he can barely hear it, where it's just like background, but you associate it with fun things, with playing fetch and giving it treats, and gradually increase the volume. So that can help teach the pet to not be so worried about
that.
The problem with storms is you've got more than just the thunder. You've got changes in ambient light. You've got lightning. You've got changes in ozone, barometric pressure, and things that you really can't desensitize against. So if those first two approaches help, then you're in good shape. But if you have a dog that really has a panic attack where you're getting this epinephrine, that's adrenaline release, and all these physiologic changes, then oftentimes you have to go to anti-anxiety medication. Sometimes if you can just block the panic attack through a season or two, you can wean the pet off the medication. So that's something you might want to talk to your veterinarian about.
Maria, we've got to run, but good luck, okay?
Very good. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Wayne, always good to have you here. Thanks so much.
Great to be here.
Dr. Wayne Hunthausen of the Westwood Animal Hospital here occasionally to talk about your dogs and cats.